Hey, everybody. Hope you guys are having a good week. Before we get to my guest, do not go buy a door for your house, a front exterior door. It is so complicated. I've been at this for 2 weeks. They're different. There's steel, there's fiberglass, there's wood. There's a core inside. There's three different types of core. There's five different types of glasses. And then I'm dealing with one place, like they've got six locations. And I call a location like with a number that's supposed to be direct to that location. And instead it sends me to like this central phone. And then the guy has to transfer me to that location. I'm like, why don't you just let me go right to that location? And then I say to the guy, I go, I need to speak to Ed F in your so-and-so store. And he's like, Ed Jr. or Ed Sr.? I go, I don't know. He goes, well, there's two Eds. I go, you know what? Just transfer me. I'm willing to bet the house that there's not a third Ed. So I can handle two Eds when I call over. And we'll figure it out, myself and the person on the other end of the line. But transfer me over! It's brutal. There's more to this. I'll tell you next week. But you're better off just putting a plastic bag in front of your house than buying a door. All right. Enjoy my guest this week. It was really great talking to Katie Sackhoff, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week, everybody. Enjoy Katie. My guest this week is currently reprising her role as Bo-Katan in The Mandalorian, now streaming on Disney Plus, known for playing Lieutenant Kara Starbuck Thrace on Battlestar Galactica, which I thought was a great series, and also known for her work in the Netflix and A&E series Longmire. It's really nice to have you on. It is Katie Sackhoff. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think we have a little bit in common. You were a swimmer, and I was a swimmer growing up, and I know swimming was maybe something. Yeah, you were gonna do maybe as a career or more intensely, but you got a knee injury or something.
Yeah, I mean that had been my intention. I knew that I could swim in college, and then beyond that, I don't know. But I knew that it would be some sort of a career for me. That was my plan. I had a knee injury when I was 16, and it changed that trajectory of my life.
Yeah, I think that actually probably was a good thing, because otherwise you might not have been a movie or a television star. So that's pretty, that things work.
Probably be a swim coach right now.
Exactly. What was your strokes? What did you swim?
I was a breaststroker.
Oh, okay. I was freestyle and butterfly, and I did the IM.
Oh my God, butterfly, I hate it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird thing. I always liked it. I don't know why. I was okay. I wasn't, I wasn't turning the world on, but anyway, and I thought that was interesting. You don't meet many swimmers. It's not a lot of us out there that have done it a long time. But anyway, I want to talk to you about the series, The Mandalorian, and bringing your animated character to life it must be really cool for you. And you talked about the family dynamic. And you've done, it's really interesting as an actor, and a lot of people listening may not know that there's always a lot of backstory that actors do and research to develop a persona for the character that they can draw from as an actor. And you said, I always found that to be very interesting. And I constantly want to know how that happened, because I'm so intrigued by this family dynamic and talking about the development of your character and her relationship with her sister. And you've said in a way that Bo is a reluctant leader, but she's settling into that role. Do we see her becoming less reluctant as the series goes on, or how are you playing that?
Yeah, she is a reluctant leader. She's the younger sibling to a ruler, and as the younger sibling, you never think you're going to have to rule. I mean, that means that something's going to happen to your family. And so she was a warrior. That's who Bo-Katan was. She was, she definitely had a very clear idea of who she thought her people were and what her people's place in the empire was. But, you know, I don't think she ever wanted to lead. That's not who she is, you know? And so I do think that she's leaning into that more. I think because she wants to bring her people back together again, you know, and she makes it very clear that Mandalorians are stronger together. And so she's trying to bring as many people back together as possible.
If she weren't thrust into this role, what would she be doing? I mean, a lot of times I think we know what we want to do, but there's something happening subconsciously or unconsciously that is really what we should or will do. What would she be doing if she weren't thrust into this role, do you think?
You know, I don't know. You know, Bo-Katan has never led in peace. She's always, you know, led in turmoil. So she makes a very good soldier. That's who she is, you know? And so there is a wisdom that is coming with her age that is, vital to leading, I believe. So we'll see, you know, we'll see. She definitely is not a pacifist. Mm-hmm. And we know that having watched the Clone Wars and Rebels,
right,
that's not who she is. So, you know, whether or not she's actually capable of leading is a completely different story. You know, I mean, just because you think you can do something doesn't mean that you can. And it also doesn't mean that people will follow you.
Right.
And so we'll just have to wait and see what her place is in Mandalore.
Yeah. Well, you talked about texting with Dave Filoni, one of the executive producers, about her backstory. And like you did it over the course of a weekend and you really learned a lot. What insight did you get from some of that research that you did that you didn't have at that point?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, when I first started playing Bo-Katan, she was a dream come true because I mean, to be in the world of Star Wars was amazing.
Right.
But she was also, up till that point, Clone Wars was the only thing that my nephews could watch that I'd been in. So,
right. So
you know, it checked that box.
Right.
And so I never really, tried to understand her on a deeper level. I just tried to understand the moment that she was in because it's voice acting. I really, you know, and at that point you're listening to what Dave Filoni tells you to do, you know? Mm. But as time went on, and I've got friends that are huge Star Wars fans and my fiance as well, that understand the world to an extent that I never did, that, like Dave, if you sit down and talk to them, they can tell you everything you ever wanted to know about Star Wars, including timelines and how television shows fit in. And I think that the moment I realized that Clone Wars fit into the movies and that you could actually watch the movies and Clone Wars and the timeline was seamless, to me, it became something greater than what I had contributed to the show. That's when I became like a really big fan when I could sit down and talk to them and they explained it on such a deeper level to me. And then I actually, you know, cause I was a huge fan of the movies as a kid. I remember sitting down with my dad and watching them and seeing Leia for the first time and realizing that there were strong, capable women out there on, you know, in television and film. And, you know, I remember this visceral reaction to seeing Ewoks for the first time, like things like that,
right,
where, you know, and what Mandalorian does so beautifully is that it takes the viewer back to that feeling. There is something tonally about the Mandalorian that hits so close to people's heart. That's special, really
right.
Special.
Yeah, it is. When you said it's, you felt that to be something, to be part of something greater than what you had known before, sort of researching and thinking about greater in what sense, that sort of that you're part of a story that feeds a much larger story, or What do you?
I think, you know, and I, you know, what I had said was that I never had a moment in my career when I stepped up and into something that was greater than anything I ever thought I'd accomplished. And that's not to say that my career, every moment in my career that I book another job blows my mind. The career that I have is just, it literally blows my mind that I've been doing this for 25 years now. But as a fan of the original Star Wars, to what I meant by stepping up and into something, you know, you have these self-imposed ideas of what you think you're capable of. You know, you put those restrictions on yourself. We as a society put restrictions on ourselves of what we think we're capable of.
Yes.
And for me, I had put restrictions on myself to what I thought I was capable of as an actor. And, you know, you do that and then you take a job and you blow past it. And then you go, oh, I'm now capable of this. Oh, I now learned how to do this. Oh, you know, and you find yourself hopefully growing as a performer. And so what I meant was stepping up and into something greater than myself was that not only did this hold, expectations of my childhood, but that for all extents and purposes, this was the biggest opportunity because of the world that I'd ever had in my career. And so it's one of those moments where you just have to, you have to believe in yourself and step up and into something and you have to get it done.
Right. And I bet you got it at this point in your life because you were prepared because of all your experience to handle it, because it's a big, I mean, you talked about the fans, like I can imagine that people will come up to you and give you feedback or notes or say, you know, you wore your hair a certain way and it wasn't like that. You know, like yeah. Like you're really under the microscope to a greater extent than most actors. And I know what you mean about, I had a whole other career. I was a lawyer and investment banker and I left to go into entertainment and comedy and worked on The Daily Show and all that stuff. And I look back and think about like the first clubs that I walked into, which were basically just dive bars to do stand-up. And I'm like, how did I figure out to do that? And how did I think that I could do it? And then I look back and I did it. And so I do think you feed off of that and go, oh, I did that. And I didn't really know a whole lot then. And I did it well or pretty well. And then I would imagine you, each experience builds on the one that preceded it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you have to do that stuff, right? You know, yeah. I mean, that is something, had I not gone through the 25 years of the career I've had and every moment, I wouldn't have been ready for this. Yeah. I wouldn't have, had you given this to me 10 years ago, I would have ruined it because I wouldn't have been ready emotionally as a person to take on the responsibility. And I just mean the responsibility of showing up to work and being overly prepared, you know, having a positive mind frame every day when I go to work. That wasn't me 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I was angsty and like, you know, tired every day and frustrated and, you know, I was just a kid. And so I think that it is a blessing when there is a visible ladder to a career because you know you've earned it and you know you're ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, and you, it is overwhelming. I mean, you talked about putting the armor on for the first time and how emotional you got. And then you walked in to Jon Favreau's office, who's one of the showrunners and writer, and he got very, just stayed calm and started sort of going through what needed to be fixed in the costume, whatever, and brought you back to earth. And this is a person of 25 years of great acting experience as a great actor, and you got emotional, right?
I did. I really did. Yeah. Because it's, you know, I was also standing next to Dave Filoni and Dave created these characters. Like Dave, you know, to see characters, to watch Dave watch me makes me so joyful because he drew these characters. He created these characters and to see them brought to life, to see Bo-Katan standing in front of him and to look seamless from the animation to the live action.
Mm.
We were both overwhelmed. We were just so excited, and I got more excited watching him, and he got more excited watching him. And it was a really beautiful moment. It was really cool.
And what was John doing in that moment? He was sort of trying to...
John was directing during that moment. So right. It was Dave and I in a room, and then we took it in to go talk to John. And then John, of course, you can see the kid in John when he sees something. And it's such a beautiful thing to see a child in someone's eyes when they look on to something. It's such a great thing. But then he also, you know, starts saying what he needs to say and figuring out the hair and doing this and doing that, making sure everything's right, because he knows we're under the microscope in Star Wars. He and Dave both know you will get picked apart. So they want to make sure everything looks the way they want it to look. And it's, they're very good. They're both geniuses.
Yeah. You talked about moving, as her was strange in the beginning. And almost likened it to Pinocchio. I thought that was really interesting. Explain that a little bit.
Well, you know, so for Bo-Katan and for me, she only ever existed in my mind as my voice. You know, when I saw Bo, I never saw my face. You know, I saw my face a little bit because obviously I played her in animation and they drew her to look like me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I never saw live action Katie. I never dreamt as Bo-Katan and saw my face. I dreamt as Bo-Katan and saw the animated version of her. And so when I stepped on set the first day, I say I was unprepared because I didn't think I had to figure out how to move like her because I'd been playing her for 10 years. I've done my backstory work, you know?
Right.
When I showed up on the day, I realized that I was unprepared. That I hadn't figured out how my face moved like Bo-Katan. You know, there is a stillness to her that I do not have. So for me, in the moments when I put my helmet on as Bo-Katan, it's so simple for me because it's like voice acting her all over again. You know, I don't have to worry about my face anymore.
Right.
It was hard. And thankfully Bryce Dallas Howard was directing the first few episodes and John was there as well overseeing. But Bryce really helped me understand and she took away she took away my insecurities about being unprepared. And she said, no, that's not what it is. You're just Pinocchio. You just need a little bit more real boy to you. That's all. Like it's there. You just need to be a real boy now. And it made complete sense to me because I finally had something to go, oh, that's exactly what it's like. Mm. I feel like I've existed as this wooden boy for 10 years. And all of a sudden a fairy godmother comes along and turns you into a real boy. And you don't know how to walk and talk.
Right.
It made complete sense to me. And I was like, oh my God. And it made my insecurities go away because I realized I was just learning how to walk and talk like Pinocchio and it would take some time. And that was okay.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure on you too, because like you said, you're bringing Dave's characters to life. And I'm sure in the back of your mind, it's like, oh God, I want to make sure I get this right for him, if for nobody else, right? Like there's a lot of pressure
Absolutely. On
you and you're doing, it's so great, the work you're doing. And I know we got to wrap in a second, but could you just tell folks, by the way, I'm talking about some of this stuff because I want people to understand who are listening. You know, they're not most people aren't actors. They're not in this business. They're not directors. And I think they think, oh yeah, you just throw on some makeup and a costume, you go out, you memorize some lines, you go, buh, 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 and you go home and then you go whatever, right? And I want people to see how much goes into making a great art and great acting. And I'm hoping that comes through to people because it is a lot. And it's very rare that people should know that, but it's very rare that an animated character gets turned into a live action, you know, big time character. But real quick before we go, the use of tennis balls in your work. I thought that was, as someone who's acted also, like, I thought that was such a great technique and I might use it in the future.
You know, it's really funny to me because I've done the work, and I was a 21-year-old on a science fiction show with lines like, "We've got violent decompressions irradiating from the port flight pod," which is a line I had during Battlestar Galactica. Number one, I have no idea what the hell it means. Number two, I mean, you can use your imagination and figure it out if you break the line down, of course. Right. But you know, it's not something I would normally say in my life. I mean, come on, right? So you have to. I've learned. And then from my other show, you know, I'm an executive producer of my show, Another Life, on Netflix. And we have younger cast on the show. And it is a sci-fi show with a lot of jargon. Mm-hmm. And I've seen them fail at it. And I've seen them have to learn how to memorize sci-fi jargon. And I say to them, this is not normal dialogue. This is not normal dialogue because you have no emotional connection to it. Emotional connection to dialogue is so easy to memorize because you have sense memory. Mm. You know what this moment's been like because you've been in a moment very similar to this before. Science fiction or medical jargon is really hard because it's an expertise that you do not have right. in your life. So you have to memorize it 10 times better than any other dialogue.
But don't you run the risk then that it comes out very wooden and mechanical and there's nothing behind it in terms of an emotion or understanding if you over memorize it, so to speak?
Yes and no, but that's where the acting comes in. The acting is not the memorizing.
Right.
That's the preparation. The acting is making it feel like it's spontaneous, that it's the first time out of your mouth. That is where you separate the, you know, for lack of a better term, the men from the boys. But the memorization is really hard. And so I've learned that if you've got it memorized while you're distracted, so while you're doing something else, if it's memorized, then you know it's memorized on the day because you needed that memorized to do the acting.
To do
because
the physics,
if it's not
yeah.
that memorized, you're too focused on your dialogue to do the acting. So you have to have it that memorized to lose yourself in the character and to make it feel spontaneous. So the best way to do that is to get distracted, cook dinner, run on a treadmill, do the laundry at the same time, do whatever it is that you can do to distract yourself. And if the dialogue is memorized, then you're prepared for your work the next day. And so my fiance was helping me memorize my dialogue for Bo-Katan, and he was throwing tennis balls at me. Like, we had a bunch of tennis balls around the house because of dog toys, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I would highly suggest people do this because it forces you to use your hand-eye coordination, which takes your focus away from your brain, which is your dialogue. It was the best thing that I've ever learned. I mean, please don't use golf balls. I promise you a couple of them didn't hit me in the face.
Yeah.
But it was such a great way to learn my dialogue. You know, I used to be a smoker. Mm-hmm. And I would sit for hours outside smoking, memorizing dialogue, because I was doing something mindless while memorizing it. It would help me. And when I quit smoking, I couldn't memorize my dialogue. And I had to search and find different ways to do it. And so I walk around the neighborhood with my script, and that's how I memorize now. But the dialogue for sci-fi is very different.
Yeah.
And you have to be overly memorized. So get your significant other to throw balls in your face, and you'll be prepared. I promise.
Well, my wife's been throwing balls in my face, so now we have a reason, and for other reasons, like getting mad at me. But now we can use this. But I would think too, just to finish that thought, like so when it's so embedded in you, that technical jargon, because it does need. If I'm watching you, it does need to feel like that's come out of your mouth before as that character, right? Like it can't land on me in a way that seems like it's uncomfortable for you or it's awkward. Like it's just like it's like a plumber going, geez, you know, the U joint is broken. Like it needs to feel like that guy said that 400 times because he has. So yeah, it's really. I'd love to talk to you another time.
Things like Gazanti Frater a million times. Like if Gazanti Frater, like Bo-Katan has said that 5 million times in her life. Like I can't be searching for the word Gazanti Frater.
Right,
and it's got to be so memorized and so memorized that I could 5 years from now still do it. It may
right.
take a second for me to remember it, but it's so embedded, like the line, I've got violent decompressions irradiating from the port flight pod. I can't forget it now because it's so embedded. It's there. I have nightmares about forgetting sci-fi dialogue.
Just for the hell of it, you should write your own vows when you get married and just work that into your version and not tell your fiance and see if it blows his mind. You know?
really?
Listen, I'd love to
throw balls at
each other. Well, you should throw tennis balls at each other while you're doing your vows. Listen, everybody, go to Disney Plus and check out The Mandalorian and Katie's great work in that, Bo-Katan. And by the way, I would like to talk to you another time. We'll have you on about Another Life in your show. I think that's a really great show. So maybe we'll get you on again to do that.
What a learning curve for myself as a producer, as an executive producer.
Yeah.
I've learned so much. Just producing through the first season with a very young cast and then the second season through COVID was I learned so much.
Yeah, and I'm always interested in talking to folks about making that jump because I've done in front and behind the camera too, and it's different, you know, but one informs the other. And I think if you have all of those experiences, I'm sure you'll be a better actor because you're an executive producer. Not that you're not a great actress, but you know, I think all things inform other things. But it's so nice to have you on. I'm happy for all your success, and I'm glad you blew out your knee when you were 16. Otherwise we wouldn't have you doing all this great work, and have you on again soon. Yeah, Katie Sackhoff. Nice to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right, there you go. That's Katie Sackhoff. Check out the YouTube channel. We've been posting stuff there, youtube.com/PaulMercurio, and follow me on social media. Hope you guys enjoyed this week's interview, and we'll see you next week, everybody.